We hear a lot about the decisions women make when they become mothers, whether to stay at home with the kids or keep working, and the pressure to juggle career ambitions with a desire to nurture and even enjoy raising children. We often ask whether the modern woman can, as Tina Fey's Liz Lemon character liked to say, have it all. But some men grapple with these very decisions as fathers. Good morning, I'm Gina Kaufman. Today on Central Standard, we'll hear what life is like for Kansas City's stay-at-home dads. A handful of these local dads contributed to a literary anthology called Dads Behaving Dadly. We'll hear about that too. Stick around for Central Standard after this news. Good morning and welcome to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman. Today we're talking about the rising number of dads making parenting a full-time job. With Father's Day approaching, we thought it would be a good time to recognize the stay-at-home dads in our midst and to find out whether Kansas City is an accepting, supportive place for these guys to raise their kids. I'd like to start by welcoming Shannon Carpenter to the studio. He's a stay-at-home dad who's active in a group called KC Dads, which he joined about 6 years ago. Hi, Shannon.
Hi. It's good to be here. Thank you.
Thanks for coming. When did you become a stay-at-home dad? Was that something you'd thought about wanting to do someday, or did circumstances affect the decision?
It was 6 years ago, and we had my daughter for a year, and my wife was pregnant with my second child. And about 5 months in, we decided that we wanted someone to stay home. We didn't come to any kind of conclusion. But it got to the point where every morning we'd drop her off at daycare at 6, and every day I would pick her up at daycare at 6. And that was what we did for a year. And it wasn't the life that we wanted to lead. We wanted to be more involved. So we sat down and talked about it, and I joked. The first thing I said was a joke about, well, maybe I'll stay home. My wife's an advertising executive, and I was basically a social worker. So her income was much greater than mine. And I joked about it. And
I'm interested that it felt like a joke to you at first. Was it? Just because men aren't raised as boys, maybe thinking about that as an option.
But I never even considered it until that exact moment of that conversation. It didn't even come into my head. And then I went to the internet and looked around and found a couple guys that are actually doing the stay-at-home dad thing. And I started changing my own mindset that maybe it wasn't so weird, maybe it wasn't so different.
What was your wife's response when you made what was actually a joke? Did she take it as a joke?
A little bit, but not terribly as much as I did. You know, she didn't tell me then, but she knew she didn't want to be the one to stay at home. She knew that she wanted to work, and that's where she was happiest at. And I was very happy in my job, and I was very good at what I did. But at the same time, alone, I was better. You know, that was something that I could do and do well. So that's how it started. That was the joke. And then we talked about it more and more over the next couple of months. And so about a month or two before my son was born, we decided I would be the one to stay at home. I'd quit my job, and there you go. That's what happened.
You mentioned that you were better alone. Can you sort of unpack that a little?
Yeah, it's when you're home alone with the kids, you have maybe a two-year-old, an infant, or in my case now an 8, a 6, and a 15-month-old. There's not a whole lot of adult interaction, and no one's going to give you adult interaction. You have to be more assertive and go find it. You have to get out on your own. And that's the thing that with KC Dads, it's a big thing that we believe in, is to go explore, to get out. Make friends wherever you can.
Even with an infant?
Even with an infant. Doesn't matter. You know, the places I've brought my kids, have some good, some bad, but we bring them. We bring them everywhere we go. And that's the whole point of what we do. And it's something that I can do very well. My own personality and my own nature was well suited for it.
What has the journey been like for you? Any major roadblocks along the way or adjustments you've had to make in your thinking, your behavior?
Oh, absolutely. When you start out first, you're changing your identity. For a man, a lot of times, for us anyway, it was you identify yourself with your job. It becomes part of who you are. And all of a sudden, you cut that out. You've cut that off. And now you're something else without a job, though. And so the first time you get a couple questions of what do you do for a living? What do you do for a living? It's, you know, that's what you always ask another guy. It was a little bit awkward to say stay-at-home dad. But you get, once you jump in with both feet and grasp it and take control of it, then it gets a lot easier. But that was one of the thinkings of my own way. It was like, oh, I'm a stay-at-home dad.
I'm interested in how people responded when you said it.
99% positive. It's been really fun to tell people because they get excited for you. And I don't know why they get excited for you, but they really do. And they want to ask questions. They want to talk to you about it. Even other men my own age, when you tell them and they have kids, it's something that you can, from their questions, they don't envy the time that I get, but you can tell they would want some of it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's good to see. With my generation, it seems to be a great response for the most part.
I am sitting in a studio with you, but when you say my generation, for those listeners who can't see you, kind of what are we talking about roughly?
30s. I'm 39, so there you go.
I'm kind of interested in this idea of expectations and assumptions. Men and women alike have gender-specific expectations that they can either accept or reject, but those pressures rear their head from time to time, even when we reject them. Do you struggle with expectations that either you or people you encounter might have about a dad's role in a family unit?
You know, I don't. And it's because the expectations I put on myself are the expectations from my family and me. And the outside world is not so much a concern to me. And maybe I can say that now after doing it for 6 years. The expectations we have now are mainly what my wife and I have come together and said, this is what we want to accomplish. This is how we want to do it. Anything from how we're going to discipline our kids to what constitutes a clean house, because our ideas on that are, you know, very different.
As is often
Yeah. the case. her level of vacuuming is not my level of vacuuming. So the expectations are more individualized for us. As far as the outside world and what they expect of me, it's come up a couple times. You go on the internet and you read stuff in a lot of articles, and you'll see a couple people pipe in about he needs to get a skirt or, he found him a sugar mama, and it's, you know, and it is what it is. The trolls are going to be there no matter what you do.
And that's not hurtful to you?
You know, not, I don't think so. It's nothing anybody would ever say to my face. I've never been challenged directly about it. I would certainly take issue with it. The worst that I've ever heard, and it was totally by accident, my daughter was in preschool, and I would pick her up every day at preschool, and the other kids asked the teacher, why does Vivi's dad pick her up instead of her mom? And the teacher looked right at him and said, well, she has a mama daddy.
Wow.
And I started laughing because I'd never heard anything. And I understand that she was just trying to explain to the kids the difference. But there was a better way to do it. So
yeah.
I walked over and I said, well, this is what I do. And this is what we stay. I stay home and mom goes to work and it's just different. But that was the worst I've ever actually heard. And that was unintentional. There's been a couple times I've been called Mr. Mom.
I was wondering about that. I went back and watched some clips from that movie just thinking, you know, how much has changed in our attitudes toward this role since 1983. How do you feel about people saying Mr. Mom?
For the most part, in the stay-at-home dad community, it's offensive, I guess I would say, just because we wouldn't tell a woman, we wouldn't call her Mrs. Dad for going to work. And as a dad, I'm not mom.
Right.
I don't try to be mom. I'm dad. I'm very comfortable with being that role. That's the role that I was meant to be here. And just because we do things different doesn't mean it's wrong or anything else. It just means it's different. So when you're calling me Mr. Mom, you're kind of downplaying the role of dad. And that's something that's what I don't like. Now, with that said, you know, my wife's an advertising executive. I grow a beard in the winter. I've worn flannel. I've been down that road a lot. You know, we just had
that's kind of an ongoing gag in that movie.
It is. And we just had a barbecue luncheon at my wife's CEO's house. And I said, if he challenges me to a race, I'm going to beat him. I'm just going to let you know that that's going to happen and we'll deal with it. But I can't back down. So,
well, do you think that at the heart of it, being a stay at home dad is any different from being a stay at home mom?
No, I don't think so. We may do things differently, but we all face the same challenges. I mean, what are you going to do when you're out and you're out of snacks or a pacifier or your baby has a meltdown or throws up in public? It's the same situation. It's our approach to it may be different, but it's the same challenges both of us face. The one thing I would say is when I go out, and my wife has talked to me a lot about this, when I go out usually, my bar for how I behave is a lot lower. I get credit just for going out. And
just for being with the kids.
Yeah, period. I mean, you get a lot of, oh, is it daddy daycare today? You get a lot of that, a lot of that. And we, you know, very nicely say, nope, this is what I do every day. And as soon as you tell them that, like, oh, that's so great, that's so great, that's so great. But when a mom goes out, there's no, it's just what's expected of her to do. And she gets no credit for the job that she's doing other than her own family. And with me, it's my bar is lower. I go to the grocery store with my baby and I'll have someone asking me about it.
Yeah, rounds of applause.
I do. We were at a state fair a couple years ago, and there was 10 of us, and we all had the strollers, and we all had the babies, and we all had the backpacks. And we had a couple ladies ask us if it was daddy daycare, and we said, no, this is what we do all day. And we keep walking around, and pretty soon I look behind us, and we have a group of women following us and trying to talk to us.
A fan club?
It was. It was very weird, but all we did was go out. That is all we did. But we had this group of women who just wanted who it was such a novelty to them. There's been numerous times we've been out at restaurants because that's what you do when you go out. And we've had other wives ask us about it and then take pictures and pose with pictures. And that happens once every other month at least.
Does that bother you or to be made to feel like a novelty? Or do you sort of own it and feel like, yeah, this is a cool thing I do?
I own it. I do. I take advantage of everything that I possibly can to get what I need to get done. And I understand their standpoint because if you've never seen it before or it's never been something you've ever thought about before, it can be a novelty. And I'm not going to hold it against other people for things they haven't encountered yet. So, yeah, I like taking pictures with people. It's nice.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM, streaming live at kcur.org. I'm Gina Kaufman. I've been talking with Shannon Carpenter, who's a stay-at-home dad. He's a part of the group KC Dads, and he has contributed to a forthcoming anthology titled Dads Behaving Dadly, 67 Truths, Tears, and Triumphs of Modern Fatherhood. And Shannon, your essay is funny and it's pretty short, so I wonder if you'd be willing to read it for our listeners to give them a sense of your parenting style.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The one that I wrote basically occurred, every parent knows how hectic mornings can be when you get school going and everything else. And we have a pretty good system, I thought, in place. And one day my wife came downstairs and we were all very calm and everyone was ready. And she asked me, what do you do all day? You know, what do you do in the mornings? You know, it looks like we're just sitting there. So that's where this came from. So I'll go ahead and start.
Please do.
3, 2, 1, boom. The screaming is loud and shrewd. It cuts through the air, darting and jabbing into my brain. It coincides with the big toe jabbing me in the back of the calf. I'm not sure why my wife decides to communicate with the big toe. That one's still a mystery. She at least has the ability to have loving conversations with me. I have accepted the big toe as part of marriage. Perhaps it's her direct nature and her big toe communication is effective. I roll out of bed and take stock of myself. I'm alive. I have a great wife despite her big toe communication network. I have 3 great children. They just happen to be loud and rise almost as soon as I put them to bed. My knees still work and my beard doesn't have any glue in it from the school project completed the previous day. I take a deep breath, gather my thoughts, and begin my day the only way I know how. It's time to unleash the awesome. I grab my boy Ollie, 10 months of poop and vinegar. We head downstairs while dodging the cat puke and 2 very excited dogs who try to trip me. The baby goes in the high chair. I throw Cheerios at him. He likes them, and more importantly, the dogs like them, which is good because in about 5 minutes, they will end up on the floor. I let the dogs out and manage to remember my boots before I step into the snow on the back porch. You only make that mistake once, my friends. I make a bottle and hand it to the boy about the same time the last of the Cheerios hit the floor. I hear the dogs barking in the backyard. They are ready to come in. They have Cheerios on the brain, and the thought of those delicious morsels was just sitting on the floor must drive them crazy. I'm like that with Big Macs. Now it's my quiet time. It's the only time I will have for the next several hours. This is my time to check up the news, perhaps play a little iPhone game, contact the president of Uganda and ask about the conditions in that part of the world. It's not much, but 30 minutes, but I don't think I could make it without those 30 minutes, those sweet, wonderful 30 minutes. The other kids are awake. Time to get everyone rolling. Like Tarzan calling for his jungle friends, I yell upstairs. It's almost a yodel with a deep bass signifying that for all that is holy, you don't want me to come up there and get you, because if I go up there, I'm bringing a bucket of ice water and a rabid baboon. I'll throw both in your room, shut the door, and whatever comes out gets bacon. As the rest of my kids are crawling out of bed, I turn on the tunes. I don't choose easy listening in the mornings. That's not our style. We are not an easy listening family. We are a family in constant motion. I put on a Metallica, perhaps some Rage Against the Machine, loud and proud, shock and awe. That's our mornings. I can't afford to have my kids sluggish. They won't get anything ready for school. As it stands, they don't much now. The older two plow downstairs like elephants doing jumping jacks. They are not gentle. They are not quiet. They are an air horn with its button stuck. I get them to the table in time to sometimes catch the bottle my 10-month-old hurls at the dogs. It's a game we play. He wins almost every time. Younger, earlier on as a stay-at-home dad, I imagined myself creating a masterpiece, omelets, pancakes that practically flipped themselves, quiches that were divine. But as it turns out, kids don't care much for quiche, and I found that pancakes on a school morning is generally about as good an idea as chocolate syrup and Fruit Loops. The requests I'm willing to take, awesome omelets, scrambled eggs, and bacon, a number 12, hold the mayo, bring the hash, never come. One wants cereal, the other one wants cinnamon toast. I add some oranges, fresh cut up melon, maybe even a side of bacon, because bacon is awesome. I bring the food to the table and reminding the kids not to get any food on their blankets. Yep, they bring blankets to the table and I allow it. Why? Because blankets are about as awesome as bacon. That's why. The baby gets melon and oranges. He'll actually eat half of that before throwing it at the dogs. I do it while rocking out because rocking out is our happy time. Our rocking morning sets the right tone for the day. We are going to conquer this day. We are going to grab it by the scruff of the neck and force it to be awesome. We are going to have happy mornings. We're going to have problems. We all have problems, but we're going to face them as a family and kick them in the teeth. That's my real job in the morning, seeing that the right attitude for the day, and it's more important than just about anything else combined. Spelling test today, we will own it. Sight words this afternoon, conquer them and make them watch as you pillage their village. The kids finish breakfast, head to the couch. They want to watch cartoons, and I generally let them because I'm busy changing the baby and the poop bomb that he's conjured this morning. Seriously, kid, what the heck? You don't eat enough to make such monstrous poop bombs. I send out the other two kids to get dressed for school. I let them pick out what they want to wear because I just do so love the argument that will soon follow. My daughter has caught on and now wears mostly appropriate clothing, such as shorts and short-sleeved shirts in the middle of winter. I rarely even look up anymore to check her outfit. I just tell her to change it. I like my odds of being right. My son somehow finds shirts that he wore 3 years ago that states it fits fine. It's his favorite shirt. Dad, oh please, oh please, oh please. I let him get to the second please out before sending him back up. This is all highly coordinated because I do need the extra time to figure out which room the cat has been locked in by the new mobile baby. If I don't let him out soon, he'll crap a tornado, and I deal with enough poop in my normal routine that I really try to avoid any extra credit. The kids arrive downstairs dressed. I remind my daughter to brush her hair or else I'll do it. There is no argument from her. I have big sausage finger hands that are not made for delicate work. For much of her life, my hands, trying to be as gentle as possible, mangled her head when I brushed it. My daughter quickly learned to brush her own hair. I tell my son to find his shoes. He slowly turns into a circle in the middle of the living room, looking at his feet, shocked that they aren't already on there. Dad, I can't find my shoes, he says. I remind him, like I do every morning, that they're in the shoe basket, where they've been every day for the last 3 years. He finds them as my daughter finishes her hair, and he begins to put the shoes on. He does this while hanging upside down off the couch. I start making lunches. The baby doesn't like it when I stand at the counter. I don't know why. He headbutts my leg, and half the time he knocks himself a little silly on my shin. He falls and stares up at me like it's my fault. Lunch is packed in backpacks, and in the backpacks. I take the opportunity to go through the backpacks and pull out anything the two older kids have forgotten to give me the day before, such as a notice of a play, homework assignments, or that it's their turn to bring snacks. Finally, I throw the jackets and gloves at the children. I make them put them on 10 minutes prior to the bus arriving, because if you don't, they will forget, and then you are trying to get it done running to the bus stop while carrying a baby through the snow. It's not fun, and I don't recommend it. I turn off the music and finally sit down, right about the time my wife comes down from our hour-long ritual of getting ready for work. In her eyes, we look peaceful, complete, and somewhat lazy. The kids are ready to go, permission slips for Girl Scouts are signed, and there's usually a bagel waiting for her. More often than not, her lunch is packed on the counter next to her purse, computer, and car keys. She sees me yawn as I sit in my chair, my sweet, blissful chair, and says, "What on earth do you do in the morning?" she asks me.
Well, you know, and this story gets to a lot of things, including the relationship between a husband and wife who have made this decision. And do you think that, I mean, I don't mean to pry into your really private business, but
go ahead.
You know, is it that you both have to accept a difference in terms of the roles you're taking on and the roles that society kind of trains us to believe we're going to take on as adults. Does that ever cause difficulties between the two of you?
It doesn't cause difficulties, at least not now. We had expectations going in beforehand. But our expectations of what would be done and how would we do it has changed. The number one rule we always had is I'm here to take care of the kids and to raise the children. Everything else to that is secondary. But there's still life that comes up. There's still things that come up. She would like, for example, vacuum. She would like vacuuming done more often. That was an argument we had several years ago. I replied by handing her the vacuum. I said, knock yourself out. That didn't go over well. That was a fight that that lasted for a while. And we eventually got and came to a compromise. So there's things like that that in the personal relationship, she's got to accept that I know what I'm doing. And I think that's been one of the hardest things to manage, that I'm with the kids every day. I know what size clothes they wear. I know what's going on in their heads. I know what little outies they have. And at the beginning, I think she thought that she still knew best on some things, like clothing, for example. Now, with my daughter, who's 8 now, I don't even touch clothing. But with the baby, I know what he's just grown out of that she may not realize. So a lot of times she'll put out pants that are too small or too big in the morning, and I'll change them, and she'll ask me why. And so there was things like that. The day-to-day has been more me, obviously. And so she had to learn to trust my judgment on that day-to-day.
We have another guest in the studio, and I'm going to bring her into the conversation shortly, but I feel like we've got just a little more territory we need to cover here before talking to Claire Hollander, who's a librarian who has started a group for the stay-at-home dads. Mm-hmm. But Shannon, I want to stick with you for just a minute, because you've also, you contributed another essay to this book, and mm-hmm. I just want to get that story quickly, not to read it, but I think you mentioned your 8-year-old daughter, and a father being the primary caregiver for a daughter is an interesting scenario for a lot of people's mm-hmm. minds. And I love the story that you wrote in this book, and wonder if you could just recount it.
Well, basically, the view is I do everything with my kids. I take them wherever I go, and that includes my hobbies. One of my hobbies is woodworking. So my daughter needed a new bed, and we found one at a garage sale just looking through, and it was $5. It was not in great shape. Leg was busted. Headboard was busted. But I saw what we could do with it. It was just a wooden bed. So we bought it, and I took my daughter out to the garage with me. I said, all right, this is our project. We're going to build you this bed. We're going to fix this bed. And so we took off the legs. We ran them through a joiner. We made new legs. I let her pick the type of wood she wanted to
use. She's how old at this point?
She's 5.
Right.
Yeah, that's
5-year-old's building a bed.
Yes, 5-year-old building a bed. I didn't actually let her do the table saw, and she has to wear all the gear when I'm out there. But she got to pick the wood, the paint color, all that kind of thing. So we glue up the headboard. We put brand new legs on. I show her how to use the drill. The last part of it was just attaching some molding to make it look pretty. And that's what she wanted. She picked it out. So I let her use the nail gun. And obviously I was with her, and we had our eyeglasses on and our headphones on. And I showed her how to do it. And she would just, we put it on the molding, and she pulled the trigger after going through all the same thing and heard the big whack and just started jumping up and down. And I had to remind her, we don't jump with a nail gun. That's a bad idea.
I love that. We don't jump with the nail gun, honey.
That's one thing you don't want to do. And we proceeded to finish everything else on it. And so at the end of it, we have this great bed. It's a princess bed with a very ornate headboard. And I said, well, what color do you want to paint it? And she's purple. I was like, oh, let's just do the inside purple. How about that? So I gave her a brush and let her do it.
So you've given a lesson in confidence, and maybe it worked a little too well.
I think so. I think so. And she's out there. We just built a chair for her mom, and she got to sign it with an engraver. So she's very excited about that.
Well, tell me quickly about the group that you're in, KC Dads. How did you first learn about that group, and what drew you to be in a group?
I knew alone that I couldn't do it. That the isolation for any stay-at-home parent is extreme. It can be. Your head starts going to very bad places.
Kinds of bad places?
When I first started the stay-at-home dad thing, my wife had to leave for a month to move to Kansas City, and I was going to sell the house. And so for a month, I was by myself, and my family wasn't really there. They were all doing their thing. So, but day-to-day, you just you're just with yourself talking to a 2-year-old, which is not good. And a cop car would go by just, you know, looking at the neighborhood. I'm like, are they here for me? Are they looking for me? And I realized I haven't been out in a month. I don't even know why I'm thinking that. I'm a stand-up guy, but your head goes weird places. And you start getting a little bit judgmental on yourself, I think. So when I moved up to Kansas City with my wife, I knew how to get out. And I went on the internet and found a group. And was thrilled to find other guys that do exactly what I do and join them. And that was 6 years ago. In our group, I think we have about 75 on the rolls. I would say that about anywhere from 10 to 20 come regularly with their kids. The rest of them either aged out or come sporadically. But it's a place where you can still be a guy, still be a man, and talk about manly things, sports, you know, woodworking, whatever you want. But then also talk about childcare without stepping on any toes, because sometimes you want to talk about breastfeeding. It's an issue and we know a lot about it, but you don't want to talk to that mom's group because the conversations never flow and there may be embarrassment on one part of another, but you can come to dad's group and talk about all those things. Potty training, you know, how do you get your kid to potty train? How did my kid's acting out and hitting? How do I deal with that? And those are things you can talk to guys that either have been through it or going through it at the same time. And for me, the group has been just a godsend.
And you feel like it's uncomfortable to do that in a mom's group as a guy?
It is. I've actually been a part of a mom's group for a very short period of time. And they were very welcoming, but you could always tell there was a division. There was a standoffishness. And I understand it. I do. When we go to the park, you'll see a group of moms talking to each other. And you may say a word here, a word two there, but you never get a full conversation going. At least you don't a lot. And sometimes you do. But I understand it. You know, especially I'm not a smaller man, and especially in the winter I have my beard going. You know, I get that they can be untrustworthy, and I don't hold it against them. I mean, it's their kids, and they've got to do what they do. So being with dads, though, takes away all that, and it just creates a really good open atmosphere for us.
Well, we're joined by another guest in the studio, as I've mentioned, and she's very familiar with this group of dads. Claire Hollander is a librarian at the Central Branch of the Kansas City Public Library. She created a story time and reading group specifically for dads and their kids. Claire, good morning.
Good morning.
What prompted you to start that program?
Well, actually, the guys came to me. One of the guys was in the library one day, and one of the things that Shannon hasn't really talked about is that they go on field trips all the time. And he thought that the downtown library would be a fantastic place to do a field trip. And so Gus asked me, do you do tours? And I said, absolutely, we do tours. And he told me a little bit about the group. And their idea, I believe, coming down was that it would be a one-time visit, to just like they went to Union Station, just like all the places they go. But I had other plans.
Libraries like for you to come back and ideally return the books, too.
Yes, exactly. They were a little anxious about returning the books because checkout times are 3 weeks. We see them every 4 weeks, but we worked around that. No problem. They can bring them back in 4 weeks. And I don't think they thought that their kids would be able to handle sitting still for stories. And I was able to prove them wrong on that. The children were able to prove them wrong on that. So we've been doing this now about 6 years.
Yeah.
I think we've missed 2 months out of the whole 6 years.
Is there a difference between this particular group and the others like it that you encounter?
Well, for one thing, they are a group. They're raising their children together. The children, I don't know if they actually call them. They don't call you Uncle Shannon. They just say Shannon. Mm. The children know all the dads. I don't see groups of moms that are like a club like this is.
So they all happen to be in the same places sometimes, maybe more than they are like an active, like kind of almost group parenting, army?
Yes.
Yes. Well, you mean the moms or the other groups I see? Yeah, I have a group of people that come once a week to story times, and there's sometimes 60, 70 people there for that. And they get to be friends. They meet each other at the library, and then they make plans. But they don't do what these guys do in terms of, I don't know, you guys get together all the time.
We do.
Yeah.
And we do have a group parent. There was a study. We participated in a study a couple of years ago where this question came up, and her conclusion was exactly what you said, that in our group it's a lot more willing to or able to group parent, to correct children without going to their own father. You just handle it there. And I never thought about it because that's just what we do. But yeah.
Yeah, it's true. You don't see moms correcting other children like these guys. Or like one time Mick had to go up to the fourth floor. And so he just let everybody know, I'm, you know, keep an eye on my kids. And then one of his kids got hurt. And whoever was the closest dad was the dad who dealt with it. And the child was completely yeah. comfortable with that.
As a librarian, are you bringing a similar selection of books to these kids? Is there any difference in your reading selections that you provide, or is that pretty across the board?
It's fairly across the board. Now that I've been doing this, I do pay more attention to the dads. You know, they've heard my spiel over and over and over again, so I am more conscious that I want to bring new books into it. You know, if I see a group once a year, next year, I'm not going to see the same kindergartners. I might use the same books that I used last year. But with these guys, they constantly challenge me to find fun and exciting things.
And it's been how many years?
Six.
So yeah. I'm guessing that these kids, a lot of them have gone from one age range to another, and have you witnessed that progression, or do they kind of graduate at a certain age?
No, absolutely. It's very fun, especially on days when there is no school, because, yes, there are a lot of children who have aged out, meaning that they go to school. They don't go to story time at the library anymore. And so the days that they don't have school, the older kids do come to the library, and it's awesome to see them. And I must say they are all very strong readers, and I will find the older kids camped out someplace in the library reading a book, oblivious to the mayhem going on around them.
Do people in the library tend to be welcoming of the group and nonchalant about the idea of dads as primary caregivers, or do you witness any kinds of subtle judgments or things like that?
Oh, no. Like Shannon said, most people are very much, they think it's a cool thing. One of my favorite things to do is tell people that once a month I host the local chapter of the National Organization of Stay-at-Home Dads, and they go, wow, that is so cool. So, yeah, no, people are very accepting.
Well, we would like to hear from the stay-at-home dads out there. What has this experience been like for you? Call us at 816-235-2888. Central Standard will continue this conversation about stay-at-home dads in Kansas City after this break. I'm Gina Kaufman. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman talking with Shannon Carpenter, a stay-at-home dad with KC Dads, and Claire Hollander, a librarian at the Central Branch of the Kansas City Public Library. We'd also like to hear from you about the community of stay-at-home dads here in Kansas City. If you're a stay-at-home dad, what has the experience been like for you? Are there things you wish people understood about your role? This is your chance to get it out there. Call 816-235-2888 to join the conversation. That number again is 816-235-2888. And I'd like to just briefly catch up on some of the things that Claire was just saying about this group of dads. Shannon, what do you think is unique about your parenting group other than the fact that you're dads?
We don't stay home. I know it says stay at home dad, but I would guess 4 out of 5 days we're out adventuring, wherever that may be. And the way our whole philosophy with it is sometimes we do things for the kids, but sometimes we do things for the dads. Because the truth of it is, if you go to a Civil War battlefield, it's still a large field. And if you're six, that's awesome. It's great. And they can just take off. So some of the things we do for us and some things we do for them. There are very few things here in Kansas City I don't think we haven't done yet. I don't know if there's anything. There's two that I know. The Legler Barn Museum, I don't know why we haven't been out there. And
I like that you've been to so many places that you can actually list the places you haven't been with
ease. Yes, it's easier to do it that way. And we've been to a few things that we probably shouldn't have gone to, but you know, it's a great story later, so we'll take it.
I am interested in the terminology because you mentioned it says stay at home dad, and mm-hmm. as I was preparing for the show, I was thinking about that terminology and also stay at home mom. I mean, it's interesting terminology.
It is. With the whole stay at home dad thing, you know, the acronym is SAD, which aww. I know is not the best thing we want out there, and there's been chances to try it or change it, and people have tried to get away from it. And I'm certainly not helping by going on radio and saying sad. But that's just what it is.
You mentioned that you do some things just for the dads themselves. Yeah. And I've noticed that part of your group, the activities include outings just for the dads, like dad's nights out and also mom's nights out for the breadwinner moms to have their own support network. Could you talk about the importance of those outings that are that don't involve the kids?
Well, for the dads, you know, there's sometimes you need to sit down, have a beer and cuss. And there's a frustration. There's something that you're trying to work through.
And some might argue that moms have that need as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why we have the moms night out as well, because you just need that chance to talk to somebody who's maybe not as close to the situation to you, or maybe you just want to vent and you don't want your spouse to hear you vent anymore. And for when the dads go out, it's that chance to go do things that are more for us. The typical thing is we'll see some terrible movie with the idea it's going to be a terrible movie that no one would ever see with us. And that's great. That's awesome. That's something we can do together. And then we can go have a beer and talk about those things. And for the moms, having the pressure of being the sole breadwinner, it's a tremendous pressure. And a lot of pressure that a lot of us dads at one point in time have dealt with, including myself. But to be around other moms who are in that same position and being able to talk about their jobs and the pressures that they have with those is a great thing. And the moms, a lot of the moms have become very close friends. They vacation together. They go places together.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's actually really nice. Our view in KC Dads is it's more family oriented. I know the name says dads, but we do. We include the moms and everybody else, and we do several events each year for the whole family, from drive-in movie night, Christmas parties, picnics, things like that.
Let's talk to Jean, who has called us from Fairway at 816-235-2888. Hi, Jean.
Good morning, and thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to comment on what an enormous amount of work it was for me. I stayed home in the early 90s with my own newborn and my nephew through their toddler years for about two and a half to 3 years, and the workload was enormous. I don't think many men get the chance to see what the housewife scene is about, or just that day-to-day thing with the diapers and the meals and the cleaning and the laundry. In the 3 years that I stayed home, I don't think I ever got the laundry finished and the dinner on time for my wife to come in and all that, but I mean, the workload was enormous. I couldn't wait to get back to the office. that was my comment. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Gene. Do you think that there's a misconception about the amount? Like, stay at home, it sounds so leisurely.
It sounds great, doesn't it? It sounds, I'll just go to the pool and hang out and it'll be done. And that's obviously Gene knows. It's not it. You never stop moving. You never stop doing. It was yesterday. My day started at 6. And by the time my day ended and everyone was in bed and everyone was taking care of it, it was 9 o'clock at night. And that was the first moment I had the entire day to myself. But yeah, I think it's just whoever's not staying home doesn't realize what it takes sometimes to just live in the house, to keep it clean and keep the kids going and all that kind of thing.
Do you think that the camaraderie of the group that you've built and the people out in the community like Claire, who are sort of part of your team as well, do you think that helps relieve some of the burden of that work, that workload?
It does, because most of what you're doing, a lot of what you're doing is trying to keep the kids active and busy. And when you go to places like Claire's Library, you have something set and it's in a safe environment and you can take a step back for just a minute and relax a little bit. And with our group, if I need something, I know I can call one of the guys and boom, we can get it done. For example, they're babysitting my kids right now as we speak. As I'm on the radio, they're back in the room babysitting all my children. And it's been that kind of support that makes the rest of it easier.
You know, they are here on a field trip, and I'm interested that you use the word babysitting, because that's a thing that I've heard people refer to husbands when they stay at home alone as the children as babysitting. And I think that's fascinating. They're the parent.
That's actually not... We take offense at that. The census counts this as alternative child care in the at-home dad world, the national organization. There was a big push against that. We're not alternative child care. I'm dad. I don't know. There's only so many ways you can explain it. Mm-hmm. No one is responsible for my children but me. When they're home with me, they're not being babysat. They're with dad.
Yeah. And I read that the number as of the last census in 2010 was 150,000 stay-at-home dads in the United States.
Yeah.
That represents a growth of 65% since 2000, which is a huge jump, but 150,000 is still a small number.
And the numbers in general, at least the national organization doesn't really trust the numbers, because the way that they get those is basically if you do any kind of work outside the home, even if you are the primary caregiver, it wouldn't matter. You're not an at-home dad. So there's many guys. For me, for example, writing this book, I got a royalty check from it. And that will now classify me as not being an at-home dad, even though I'm still the primary caregiver.
And it's essays about being an at-home dad.
Yes, I know, which knocks me out of the roles, apparently. So there's 150,000, some people say 2 million. It fluctuates so much. And I don't even know what to think about it anymore. I don't even know if I care. I just try to do my thing.
It's also interesting that the growth was between 2000 and 2010. Do you think that the recession of 2008-ish has anything to do with that, or just anecdotally from the people you know?
You know, that's actually something we get asked a lot. Did we get a lot of growth? Did we get a lot of growth during the recession? We got some. I would say we have more now than we did before. There are some guys that originally came to us because they got laid off from their job. And once they got to us, decided they didn't want to go back. They chose to be a stay-at-home dad. There's guys like me who chose from the beginning to be an at-home dad. And we've had a few that are obviously in between work, and this is what they're doing now. And to be honest with you, it's one of those arguments that I say it just doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You take whatever time you can take with your kids and make it as good as you can. Because the truth of it is, for a lot of us, eventually my kids are going to grow up. They're going to go away. I'm going to go back to work. So it doesn't matter how I got the time. What matters is I have the time.
Are you nervous about that going back to work someday thing? And not,
oh, yeah.
I believe that what you're doing now is work, but going back to an office type environment.
Going back to the cube farm is a little worrisome, because you realize when you quit what you give up. You give up all the seniority, all the experience that you've used, all the networking. And it's been 6 years. And it's actually something we talk about and have dealt with as a group. We'll lose guys that are going back to work. But to get back to work, they have to redo a resume. They'll have to talk to people about interviewing again. And so it's something that does come up a lot. And it, for me, does it make me nervous? Yeah, it does. I mean, to explain it to someone, to a hiring manager, that this was a good thing for me to do, that this was important for me to do, and then have it translated into job skills that they would appreciate, that's what worries me.
Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM. I'm Gina Kaufman, sitting here with Shannon Carpenter, a stay-at-home dad, and Claire Hollander, a librarian at this Kansas City Library's Central Branch. She has a special group for stay-at-home dads with their kids, a reading group. And we'll turn now to John in Olathe, who called us. Good morning, John.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Just to piggyback a little bit on what Shannon just was saying, it took me actually a couple of years before I realized what a huge gift my wife had given me for me to spend this much time with my children. Excuse me. That you know, it goes by quick, and I'll never get this chance again. So, you know, it's to look back in a couple of years from now and say, wow, what a bonding time that was for me to, you know, to have that time with my kids. It took me a while to actually realize that.
John, what was the process like? How did you come to realize it? How did you make that transition into really being sort of living this and loving it?
You know, it wasn't something that just, you know, out of the blue hit me. I think it was more of a process of watching the kids grow and, you know, the skills they develop and everything. And I'm like, you know, I got to see that first. You know, I was there when this happened. I was there when that happened. So that's basically what did it for me.
Thank you so much for calling, John.
All right. Have a good day.
Something that's, I think, kind of interesting is that there's a lot of, I think, compassion and support for women who have trouble going back into the workplace after they've been at home for a little while, or
yeah,
saying goodbye to their kids in the morning and maybe not being there to witness those little milestones. Do you think there's the same kind of support for working dads? Do you think that what John was just expressing is that he would have felt like he was missing out to not be witnessing these things?
I don't think there is, other than people who are already doing it. And John's right. I mean, the opportunity and the gift that we get to be there for these moments is something you'll never regret. But as far as support system about getting back into work and that sympathy from it, no, it's just not there yet. And that's neither good nor bad. It's just non-existent.
Claire, speaking of being there for all these moments, you're there for a lot of moments that these dads share. And I wonder if being like an insider outsider, an insider in that these are people you see once a month and you're a part of their lives, but they have definitely their own community. What would be your observations about the little moments that you have witnessed?
Well, as far as the dads with their children, you mean, I think they're very, very tender people and very compassionate with their children. And it's been really rewarding for me to get to grow with these guys and become part of their community. And their children, watching their children grow up, has been fantastic.
Has it changed any of your ideas about things or...
One of the things, no, not really, but one of the things that you don't, there's a lot of things you don't think about. And one of the things that I thought about after a visit with the dads was that never occurred to me to pay attention to buying books on how to braid hair or, you know, how to take care of little girls' hair. It's a big deal for these guys. And
probably for the little girls.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was kind of a fun thing. I went out and found some books on hair care for specifically for with these guys in mind.
You know, Shannon, in addition to maybe not having braided your own hair as a child, it's also much more common for girls to take on work as babysitters in their teen years. And that means they've often done some of the tasks that are associated with childcare before in advance of parenthood. Did you have that kind of experience to draw on? And if not, do you see it as a setback for some dads?
There's a lack of confidence to begin with. I mean, I'm bald. I haven't braided hair ever. And I have a little daughter. I've rarely brushed hair.
Have you ever gotten a brush caught in her hair that had to be cut out?
No, not yet. But
well,
I might have just pulled it out.
Better than my dad did.
I may have just pulled hair out, though. On some of those things, though, there's a convention. We have a convention every year. National At-Home Dads have a convention every year. And one of the classes they offer are hair. And we have a hairstylist that comes in. And the first time I've taken it twice, you know, I wanted to get better at it, was the first thing he gave me was product. And I was like, this is amazing stuff. It's detangler, apparently. I had no idea that this thing existed. And so that made our mornings a lot easier than me just dry brushing and wondering why I was going crazy.
There's a how-to book for everything.
There is.
Let's talk to Randy in, I believe, Baser?
Yes.
Hi, Randy.
Hi, I'm actually belonged to the KC Dads group a couple years ago, and had some great times with Shannon and with Claire. But I'm a teacher by trade, and so when I joined the group, my nickname was the teacher. And I think I brought in a different perspective to the dads group, but now that I have gone back to teach in the classroom, you know, my views as a teacher has been changed by my role as being an at-home dad. I think I view things and perspectives differently from the role of a parent in how these guys approach the world and take their kids out and interact with the world. I bring that into my classroom now.
Yeah, what specifically about your teaching? Can you point to any, like, concrete moments where you found yourself in a situation and thought, what would the dads do?
You know, I think part of it is that I've kind of let go of control a little bit. Just this year, we went to the took my students to the zoo for a field trip, and part of that, you know, the teacher inside me wants to take control and ask questions and guide the students through exhibits and say, okay, here's what you need to look for, here's what you need to do, and ask them questions. And after being with the dads, it's more of, you know, let them explore, let them lead me. What do they notice and discover on their own?
Do you think this is something special about this particular group, that they have this ability to relinquish control a little bit?
You know, I think part of it might be the challenge of being a little bit different. And I think part of it's just, I don't know, maybe that's the way that that guys approach things differently than women do.
Interesting. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Randy, and congratulations on all of your milestones, on having been a stay-at-home dad and now getting back to the classroom.
We miss you, Randy.
Yeah, it's summer, Randy. You can come out now. You can come play.
Claire, in your observations of different kinds of groups, do you think that this is a trademark of this group, a willingness to give up control?
Yeah, and I always wondered if it was a matter of, you know, male versus female. Not quite sure. Yes, they are not overly bearing on their children. It's very delightful to watch. And like you were saying, Shannon, about the lack of confidence, it doesn't show, to me anyway, and watching these guys deal with an exploding diaper or, you know, a fight that erupts or something, they seem extremely confident to me. And their children are amazing. And growing up with this group, I think, is they're giving these kids a great gift.
Shannon, I imagine that taking on this role has opened you up to some experiences you wouldn't have otherwise had, maybe some of them good, some of them bad, all kinds of things probably. But what have you learned from this job you've been doing, this full-time parenting job, and how have you grown from it?
Fake it till you make it. That sound about right? No, the truth of it is the people who matter to me, my wife, my kids, it's their approval that I'm looking for. And knowing that and being sure in that kind of makes the world an easier place. It makes me more comfortable with myself. And that's a really freeing feeling.
Knowing, you know, who and what matters and yeah, who and what maybe doesn't so much.
Yeah, it really does. I can go about my day not trying to please everybody. I have to please these three little ones and her, and I'm good. That's all I got to do. And then definitely patience. I mean, before I thought I was a patient man, I thought I was very mellow. But there's something about kids, you know, grabbing everything off a shelf and trying to break it in a grocery store that really tests that patience. And you discover new levels of patience.
Yeah. What's next for the KC dads? Do you have an upcoming field trip you're excited about? Or
oh, yeah.
In fact, here at KCUR.
Yeah, today was a big one for us, and we're going to go push all your buttons and see if we can break the radio station real quick.
Wonderful.
And then, we're doing family movie night is going to be at the drive-in movie in July. We're doing that together. July 7th is our big one. Every year, one of the things we do is we take a road trip, just the dads and just the kids, and we go see the most obscure, weird things you've ever seen. And this year, last year was a ball of twine.
Well, we'll have to leave it a little bit mysterious what this year is, because that is all the time we have for this pre-Father's Day conversation with and about stay-at-home dads. Shannon Carpenter and Claire Hollander, thank you so much for your time. I know
you're
busy. And Shannon, I know you're eager to join the KC dads here at KCUR for their worthwhile rainy day outing.
Thank you.
To listen back to this conversation or any of our past shows, go to kcur.org/centralstandard. You can also stay current on our news by following us on Twitter. Our handle is @KCURCST. Tune in tomorrow for a check-in on biking infrastructure in Kansas City and a little guide to the suburban trails. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stick around for Up to Date next.